Welcome to the OA Serenity Sunday Meeting Podcast. Serenity Sunday is now hybrid, meeting in person at Roxbury Park in Beverly Hills and on Zoom. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup's webpage at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live in either iteration. Now that we're meeting in person, Serenity Sunday has regular meeting expenses and would appreciate Seventh Tradition donations to help support the meeting and this podcast. You can donate via Venmo at Serenity Sunday 2023 or through PayPal, serenitysunday1212@gmail.com. The opinions expressed on the Serenity Sunday podcast are those of the individual speaker and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. And now, our speaker.
Hi, I'm Ivy. I am a compulsive overeater. Wow. So I want to preface this by saying everything that I say is just my opinion, my experience. Sorry about that. It's my experience. My experience, my strength and hope. If there's something that I say that resonates with you, awesome. That means I'm carrying the message. If there's something that I say that you don't agree with or don't understand, please come to another meeting and maybe you'll hear your story. I was told when I came here, come to at least six different meetings and you'll hear your story. And I came and like, no, I'm not going to hear my story because I'm terminally unique. Don't you know? And I came to meetings anyway. This was the crazy thing. I was introduced to Overeaters Anonymous in 1975. I went to my first meeting with my mother who was looking for, she heard about this crazy Gracie diet that was supposed to be this miracle diet. And she dragged me along with her. And I had no idea what was going on. She got the Gracie diet. She left, she dieted because that was the craziness that I grew up with. I left saying, who, what? I don't get it. Came back to a meeting in 2004, went to a meeting. I thought everyone was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs because you're not me. I'm not one of you. All I wanted to do was lose a couple of pounds. And then came back a little over 7 years ago, legit, because I then had an understanding of the 12-step process through someone I loved who had his recovery in another program. And I went, maybe there's something more than just dieting. But nonetheless, I came into the rooms in 7 years ago, whatever that year that was, really just wanted to get down to my fake driver's license weight. Like that was my goal because my whole life I did this, you know. Also, I'll give you a little bit of backstory, and I'm saying this to paint a picture, not to wag fingers. I grew up in a family with a lot of love and a lot of dysfunction. They're not mutually exclusive. My family was full of people with undiagnosed addictions. I grew up with addiction all around me. I didn't understand it. I thought that was typical. I thought that was normal. So when I grew up with crazy head things going, you know, like monkeys in my head telling me all kinds of things, I thought that's what everyone experienced. I thought everyone's head mind was racing all the time. I thought everyone had little devil angels on their shoulders telling them to do things, not to do things, to be a certain way. I thought everyone did that. So I came into the rooms, like I said, a little over 7 years ago with a chip on my shoulder because I just wanted to lose some weight. And I thought I could self-sponsor by getting literature and reading it. Yeah, that doesn't work. I learned that quickly because I read steps 1, 2, and 3. And I'm like, I was raised faith-based. Don't talk. Faith-based. Don't talk to me about God. I have God. And then I went to step 4 and it was like, no, it's not my fault. I no, I'm the victim here. Don't you know? And I kept going to meetings. People said, come to meetings. And I wanted to, in my head, I'm like, you go to meetings. And instead, what came out of my mouth was, can you recommend some good meetings in my area? I don't know where that voice came from, but the same voice that guided me into the rooms guided me to asking questions, guided me to get information. And I started going to more and more meetings. Didn't hear my story. Didn't hear my story because you didn't grow up in the kind of household I grew up in, and you didn't have the kind of food issue that I have. And then I heard somebody share something special. And the subtext of what she shared was, I care enough about myself to work this program of recovery. That's what I heard. That's not what she said. And that's what I heard. And all of a sudden, something deep in my core went, oh, that's what you've been missing. You need a spiritual program of recovery. It is not about just putting the fork down, because I am a really good dieter. I have been on various diets since I can remember. I think I was probably in single digits. I was 8, 9, 10 years old. I know 10's double digits, but I was a kid with every diet known to man. And my weight always went, up. I was a little chubbier, I was a little thinner, I was a little chubbier, I was a little thinner. And that's what I did, after a breakup. Oh boy, did I look good. Oh boy, that revenge weight loss after a breakup, man, nothing's better than that. Move across town, grow your hair out, change your phone number. Back in the day, you could do those things. It was great. And then I got complacent. Or then if I get into a new relationship and I get complacent in the relationship, I would gain weight. And that's my whole life. Because the bottom line for me was that nothing was ever enough. To this day, I struggle with that. Nothing is ever enough. The relationship isn't good enough. This food isn't good enough. This plate isn't big enough. Nothing was ever good enough. I always was a little bit of an overachiever. I wasn't. Want to go back for a second, because I had mentioned that I was raised faith-based, and I wanted to talk about that for a second. And I'm sorry if I jump around a lot. That's just how, again, how my mind works. I used to go to bed every night and pray to God. And I would pray for three things. I would pray to see the clock in the morning, because I'm slightly vision impaired. I have really bad vision. And I would pray that God would let me see in the morning. I would pray that God would make me skinny. And I would pray that God would make me popular. Those were my three prayers every night. And then I woke up the next morning scrambling to find my glasses, because I couldn't see what time it was on the clock, even though I knew what time it was because I set the alarm myself. But I would scramble. I'd still be the same body size that I was. I was a little too tall, but not tall enough. I was a little chubby, but not. And I'd still be a socially awkward, math nerd. So I figured, yes, I believe in God. I just don't believe God really cares that much about me. I'm generally insignificant. And that was my MO going through life, is that basically I'm insignificant. So I started college at a very young age, had a lot of success in college, had a lot of success in my career. Married, moved across country, had kids, bought a house, the dogs, the white picket fence, the whole shebangy. So on the surface, everything looked great. And I was really lonely and sad and miserable inside. And my weight kept slowly and insidiously creeping up. But I didn't know why. I know why. I would binge at night. During the day, when people were looking, I had normal food on my plate, normal portions on my plate. And then at night, when it was really quiet, I'd go to town. I'd go to town. I would have trough-sized bowls of cereal late at night because I couldn't sleep. And that just kind of calmed me. It just gosh, calmed the quiet, quieted my head, calmed my body. And at one point, and I've lived through a lot. So on the surface, everything looked really normal and typical. I did suffer, a lot of tragedies, whatever. Talk about the ultimate breakup. My husband passed away when my kids were very, very young, and I was shot. I was propelled into survival mode, and I was really good at survival mode. I'm so good at survival mode. Telling I got this. I got this because I'm that person. I'm that reliable, responsible person, and I did a great job. I held my career together. I held my family together. My kids are now adults who are, I don't know how, like normal, sane, beautiful citizens of this globe. Amazing. And I was so lonely and I was so sad and I was so scared. And one day, like I said, about 7 years ago, I woke up and I was getting dressed for my niece's wedding and nothing fit. My go-to gorgeous black dress-up dress wouldn't zip. I'm like, how did that happen? And I looked in the mirror, putting on makeup and curling my hair. And I went, who are you? I did not recognize this woman staring back at me. And I had known also that aside from the vanity of being overweight and being very uncomfortable being overweight, I was uncomfortable in my own skin, just on an emotional level, but also my medical records. All my ailments led to the O word, obesity. I was obese. And because of obesity, my blood sugar was out of control. My cholesterol was out of control. I had sleep apnea. I had all these things wrong with me. And I went, this God, I don't know who you are anymore. Let me see if I can find myself in a room with 12-step recovery. So that's what brought me in. I eventually found a sponsor. When I realized I couldn't self-sponsor, that just wasn't working, I found a sponsor and I said, don't even talk to me about God. I'm faith-based. And she said, great. What's your relationship like with your sponsor, with your higher power? What's your relationship like with your higher power? I went, what? What? A relationship. And it really shook me to the core. I started thinking, wow. And then I heard people share where the subtext was, I'm worthy of recovery. I'm worthy of being happy and content. And I went, ah, maybe I'm not, like mind was blown. Maybe I'm not so insignificant in the greater scheme of things. Maybe I do, that's 10, thank you. Maybe I do, maybe I can find room for recovery in my life. So I started working the steps. I started really working steps 1, 2, and 3. I did a very thorough fourth step. And then I gave it away. Like the fourth step has this great reputation. It's like, oh, it's so scary. It's so confronting. Yet no one told me about a fifth step where you actually have to say it out loud. I'm like, oh my gosh. And my sponsor said, thank you for sharing. And it wasn't, nothing I said or did was like shocking. And then I went through step 6 and 7. I just worked the steps. And the thing about working the steps, it's a miracle that they're in a certain order for a reason. Also, it's not a one and done situation. I didn't say, oh, I did that step. I work that step and now I have that step in my tool belt. So if I do have a fear, a resentment, something, I can go back to the fourth step. I can go back to a sixth step. I can make amends on a daily basis as they come. I don't have to wait till it cycles around till I do it again. I have that in my tool belt. So now that I have cycled through the steps several times, I have a web of steps in my tool belt. So if I'm feeling a certain way, and call my sponsor and say, I think I need to work an eighth step on that. I think I need to work a sixth step on this. I think, yep. And I can keep my side of the street clean. I know these are all these like little trivial platitudes and like, oh, you keep your side of the street clean. Yeah. What does that mean? It means I do the work so that I can be content. I have to work at that. I admire those people who just have this naturally. That's not me. That's not my story. My story is, and little devil, little cartoon devil on my shoulder. Now I have the tool to go. For those of you listening on the recording, I flick that little devil off my shoulder and say, not today, Satan, not today. And I do whatever work I need to do to have those thoughts, because here are the thoughts that this devil is going to tell me is the truth, but it's not. What the truth that I'm being told is, you're still not good enough. You're still not pretty enough. You're still not smart enough. There's someone better than you and everywhere, and you don't deserve what you like. These are the ideas that come into my head that's like, no, let me find happiness. Let me go. Let me work through this fear. Let me find out whose voice that is, first of all. Whose voice is that? Because it wasn't a voice I heard growing up from outside of myself. It was the voice I heard growing up from inside my own brain. I told myself, I grew up in a very large extended family. Picture, I hope it's okay that I say this. Picture like my big fat Greek wedding and Fran Drescher's The Nanny. You meld them together like that was my family. Big oversized, lots of love, lots of dysfunction, lots of addiction, and I was the one who, as a very young child, found a way to compare myself to everyone else in the room. Every beautiful older relative who was smart and in college, and I'll never get there. I'll never do. I was the one who, I was able to do that. I was able to, full of fear. I remember going in a bathroom with my cousin in one of my aunt's homes, and we locked ourselves in, and there were these skeleton keys, and we somehow got locked into the bathroom, and the skeleton key was on the inside, so we had it, but it wouldn't work from the inside. And I was, I don't know how old I was. Six, maybe, seven, I don't remember. But I remember as that young child going, okay, so I wonder how long it would take till we run out of air, run out of water, die, our bodies become skeletons, and we're found. Like, I never thought for a minute, like, no, just knock on the door really loudly and someone will figure out how to open the door. I immediately went to doomsday scenario. That's how my brain worked. And that's what happened. We knocked, we banged really loud, and somebody came and put a piece of paper under the door and said, put the key on it, and they got us out, and it was fine. But my brain immediately went to, I wonder how much longer I have till I'm dead. That's where my brain went. That's what happened with my food. How much food do I have to eat until I burst, till that little, turkey roaster stuffing thing pops out and say, I'm done. I'm done. I'm gonna leave now. No, I don't get to do that. So what I get to do now is I show up and I'm present in a different way. So I said that I have children. My kids are and were really supportive. Here's what happened in the very beginning. I am a compulsive overeater. And I was asked a question, and what are the way areas of your life are you compulsive? I'm like, yeah, I don't see it. Let me talk to people in my life. So I asked my kids. I'll try and keep this clean because what they said wasn't was a little blue. And I said to my kids one day at brunch, I said, do you want me to be compulsive in any ways other than with food? And they did a spit take and said, not these exact words, but you get the gist. They said, are you with us? And I went, really? Really? You think I'm compulsive? And they started listing the ways that I'm compulsive that I didn't realize those were compulsive. To me, that was normal because my brain was telling me, do this. I'm like, those are compulsive behaviors. They go, Mom, really? So I started looking at my compulsive behaviors, not just my compulsivity with food. Because this program doesn't work in a bubble for me. This program doesn't just work on my plate. This is a life program for me. This program has given me tools to deal with things going on in my life so they don't show up on my plate, because they will show up on my plate. You know that acronym HALT? Am I, here's what I say. Am I hungry? Like before I eat, am I hungry? Or am I angry or anxious? I have two A's. Am I lonely? I put boredom in the category of lonely because I'm bored a lot because my brain wants to go, you need to be doing. Am I lonely? And T, am I tired or am I thirsty? Sometimes I need to just sit down. What is it my mother said? She said, don't just do something, sit there. That didn't sit well with me. I'm like, no, I have, just sit there, take a breath. Oh, breathe. I get to stop. I get to breathe. And I get to be present. I get to be with the people I'm with rather than thinking about where I need to go next when we're done. I get to be here. It's 3 minutes. Thank you.
Three minutes left.
Thank you. So let me get present on what I do. I have a sponsor. I send my sponsor a 10th step. I call it a 10th step. Some people call it an 11th step. Straight out of page 86 in the big book, I answer questions. Today, was I dishonest? Was I in fear? I write it all out because I don't want to hold on to anything. I can think because I have amnesia. So at the end of the day, I'm fine. I had a great day. I'm fine. But when I stop and I pause and I go, let me rewind and play the day back. Was I angry? Was I in fear? Was I honest? Was I kind? Did I lead with love? How do I show these principles? I hold the door for somebody when I'm walking in a room, or I put the shopping cart back in the shopping cart aisle at the supermarket, rather than leaving it for to roll into someone's car in the parking lot. Those are esteemable actions that I can do every day. So I write this all down. I send that along with my food. I am a pre-planner. I pre-plan my food because when I get up in the morning and think, what do I want to eat today? I don't know. I don't trust myself to make those choices when I'm hungry. So I plan out my food. Sometimes it changes because the dog ate all my food the other day and I had to pivot. I just text her and say, dog ate my food. I'm having this instead. Period. No fuss, no muss. My food is very, very simple at home. If I want something a little fancy or a little sexier, I'll go out for that. But my food is really simple. It works for me. My food plan is really simple. I eat food that work for my body. I don't have good foods and bad foods. I eat food that works for my body. I do not eat any recreational sugar, though. Recreational sugar sends my body into a tizzy, sends my brain into a tizzy. I eat 3 meals a day, maybe one snack if I want to, and a snack is smaller, and a meal is one plate of food. Period. There's no negotiating on that. When I start negotiating with my plate, no, there's no negotiating with that. Having those parameters around my food and having the parameters of the principles of this program in my life allow me to sleep well at night, allow me contentment. There's a quote, and I hope it's okay I say this. It's from classic literature, it's not from OA literature, so forgive me. And if it's not okay, just bleep it out. And it says, "She hadn't known the weight until she felt the freedom." That quote, when I read that, it was like, oh, I'm trying to figure out what part of my body I want to tattoo that on because I need to remember that. I didn't know how burdened I was until I gave up the drama. I didn't know how weighed down, and I don't mean weight with my physical weight. Oh, I didn't even qualify with that. I'll get to that in a second. I didn't know how bogged down I was. That's my time. Until I gave it up. And just to qualify, I've been in the room for a little over 7 years. I not only surpassed my fake driver's license weight, I've lost about 75 pounds and been maintaining that weight off by working these steps every day. I don't take anything for granted. There's no cheat day. My abstinence is for any compulsive food behaviors while working toward maintaining a healthy body weight, period. Thank you for letting me share.